Is it an uprising against an institutional class, or is this more mob mentality that's just targeting one group? These are the questions we're asking right now as we look at the case of GameStop. Why do I have this feeling that 75 million people are about to go long GameStop without even really understanding what this is about, right? Because it kind of sort of feels good. Let me echo the words of Michael Moore, who said, quote, "It's going to be the biggest FU ever recorded in human history, and it will feel good." Only this time we're not talking about the election. We're talking about a stock that was left for dead, shorted by some elite hedge fund operators until a small group of investors online became a very big group of investors online, and then a massive group of investors online, to the point where they may have managed to drive the big money shorts right out of the business. Hello, everyone. I'm Trish Regan. This is Trish Intel. We are talking GameStop. About a month ago or so, I said, watch this stock. I said, watch the stock back when it was trading, I don't know, close to $30 a share, because it had some really good fundamentals. I mean, in this environment, right, where people are staying at home, the government is paying them to stay at home $400 a week, federal government checks, plus whatever you get from the state, and they're playing video games. Well, there are some fundamental reasons to kind of like this company, especially at a time when it's migrating online, closing some of its retail brick and mortar stores and turning into an online business, much like Netflix did, right, back in the day. So you can see that there are some fundamental reasons to really like this company, to really like this stock at $30 a share, right? But now we're talking major multiples of that, and it doesn't have a whole lot to do with fundamentals anymore, and more to do with this issue of, you know, let's get the hedge funds. Now, I understand that, by the way. Like, I'm not crazy about shorts. I'm going to get to that in a second, but let's get back to this sort of idea that, you know, a stock that was trading at $30 a share that may have seemed like it was fundamentally a good deal is now increasingly now trading at $190 a share, and that's down from where it was. Because of a populist uprising, now you have to start to say, wait a second, what is this really about? Is it about the stock? Is it about the company? Is it about fundamentals? Or is it about something else? Like, believe me, I want to stick it to the big guy too, right? But at what point are you willing to lose your money to do so? And at what point do our markets start to fail to act like markets, right? This online trading platform it has seemed to have sided with the hedge funds. And so all hell is breaking loose. Now, that's problematic in and of itself as well, right? Because you look at one of these trading platforms and you're like, okay, I should be able to buy and sell pretty freely. That's the whole idea. And I have this, you know, idea with a few other people, and now we're trying to execute on it, and they're in the way. Whereas if I were behind the scenes in a hedge fund behind closed doors and we were talking about this idea, I could probably do it. The question, though, is at what point does it become manipulation? I mean, you think about the LIBOR days, remember? I mean, people got in big trouble because they were scheming together to fix LIBOR. And anytime you're scheming together with a group of people to try and fix a market, that's considered a kind of market manipulation. And so, you know, at what point is it free speech? At what point is it actually market manipulation? These are fair questions. I'm going to get back to the issue of the shorts here, because I don't like them. I mean, I'm just going to say, like, fundamentally, I don't really like them. I realize they probably have a place in our markets, right? They serve a function, but come on, if you don't like a stock, then just don't buy it, right? Do you have to deliberately bet on it going down and then try and drive a news cycle in hopes of seeing it depreciate? I kind of fundamentally have a problem with that. But that's how these guys make their money. And so they're always looking for shares that they feel are overvalued in order to have a reason to sort of depreciate them. And then they make that money on the depreciation. So they're betting on a stock going down. As I always say, don't bet against America. Like, it ultimately will not pay off. And that's kind of sort of what they're doing, right? These hedge funds are sort of betting against America. Now, again, a lot of people would argue, well, they serve a place. Like, it's actually a relevant part of the market because you need to have this yin yang constantly in balance. Well, right now, whatever's going on, it's like totally out of balance. I mean, the stock is up over 1,000%. This is totally out of balance. And it's become a kind of sport, right? Where people are now trying to sink the shorts. And so they're pounding the table and they're saying, hey, you know, we believe in this stock and we're going to keep on buying it. And we're going to send the shorts basically to HELL and back. And you could say, what's so different about that really than just appearing on television and demanding that the banks mark to market their real estate portfolios? And then you go out and effectively call their loans and you send all of those really important banking stocks to zero, including putting one of them that had been in business for hundreds of years, just out of business entirely. I mean, I think a lot of people could look back on 2008 and say the shorts were a big part of that. So again, I think that this is a good opportunity for us as a country. And I think you're seeing increasingly a lot of lawmakers pay attention to this story because it's become very political. But you're going to see people say, okay, wait a second, let's take a step back. What role do shorts really play in our marketplace? Are they that vital? Right. And if they are, then okay, how do we make sure that they don't conspire to deliberately drive a stock down? I mean, think about the management teams, right? At a stock like GameStop, you're sitting there going, wait a second, like now they've targeted me and they're going to drive my stock to zero if they can. I mean, that's pretty awful, right? It's pretty awful. And then the flip side of it is if you have all these people that are gathering on Reddit to try and drive your stock to zero or maybe to the moon and back and then squeeze the shorts, then that would be a problem too. So my only point in this is we need to be thoughtful in our approach right now. I think it is very clear that the system has been rigged for too many years against the individual investor, but you also can't be in a situation where the individual investor is sort of conspiring, if you would, in these online chat rooms, granted openly, right? Openly. To try and take a particular entity down. And so we're in a tough spot right now. And I know we're in a tough spot because when you have Ted Cruz and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez agreeing on anything, that should tell you we're in sort of a precarious spot. All right. We got a lot more to talk about today because look, it's not just GameStop that's in focus right now, but The Democrats really want to change everything about our country and our economy, including giving everyone a handout. Doesn't matter if you're not even American, right? $2,000 a month, they got you covered. I'm on it. Ilhan Omar introducing a really crazy bill next. Here we go. Permanent payment to anyone who's here, even those who are not here legally. Courtesy of the Democrats and Ilhan Omar, who want to make sure that everybody gets their $2,000 a month. You know, if you think about that, that's really a lot of money, right? We're talking about $2,000. Say it's a couple, maybe with a couple of kids. What is that? $8,000 a month? $96,000 a year? I mean, 8 times 12? Wow. Like insanity squared. Insanity squared. Plus, you know, they want to make sure that everybody has free college and free health care and free this and free that. I mean, frankly, I don't know. I don't know where the money's going to come from. I don't know how this is even possible other than to say, well, maybe we will just inflate our way out of debt. We will print so much money, right? We will print so much. We will spend so much that the US dollar is no longer relevant. So that $2,000 a month, good luck with that. It'll feel more like 200. That's my concern in all this because, look, the money has to come from somewhere. You cannot just indefinitely print. You cannot print your way to prosperity. I do actually think you could cut taxes and give more back to the people. And that would help people, incentivize people, right, to work more and to want to earn more. But instead, this is all misaligned, right? They're creating perverse kinds of incentives by saying, hey, if you stay home, you're going to earn just as much as you would on minimum wage. What's that about? What's that about really? So you're going to get into a situation where you're printing so much money, whether it be from the Fed, whether it be from government, any way you slice it, it's more than we can handle. And we're already dealing with $27 trillion worth of debt. Our economy is only worth about $21 trillion on any given year. And so you're going to spend so much more than you have. And there's no one there with any kind of sort of fiscal astuteness to understand this or to demand more. And I think that's a shame. I just say, where the heck is our Tea Party? You know, I guess Rand Paul is still there and I give him credit for speaking up as he does. But nonetheless, you are in a situation right now where they will spend and they will spend and they will spend whatever it takes, right? Just to get their people elected. Not only that, oh, a person from Connecticut, a Democrat lawmaker from Connecticut has a brand new idea. Let's actually fine people if they don't vote. How do you like this? Do you know that you would get fined if you do not vote in the state of Connecticut? Yeah, there's a new sophomore Democrat there, Senator Will Haskin of the 26th District, floating a new law that really is not seen very often. In fact, mandatory voting. Mm-hmm. So mandatory that if you do not vote, you're going to get hit with a $20 fine if you fail to cast a ballot in any local, state, or national election. So much for any form of, you know, liberty, right? Like, what about the people that just say, I don't really like any of these politicians. I don't really want to vote for any of them. So therefore, I'm not voting. Oh, $20, please, for each and every election. I mean, this is just really, really weird. There would be some acceptable excuses if you were traveling, if you had an illness, if you had a conscientious objection to the whole thing. Well, then you could say, I'm not going to vote. But everybody else, $20, please. I mean, really, it's getting to be a little bit absurd. The scary thing is that something like this could catch on. I mean, it's certainly caught on in places like ancient Athens. That really worked out well, huh? Okay. You know what? I want you to go to trishaintel.com. Download my podcast right now. I am so glad you're here. I want you to check out the website. This is a place where you can actually find truth in a land right now where we don't have a lot of truth out there. You can go to trishaintel.com and get it. Sign up for my emails, and I'll see you back here tomorrow.